Greetings and welcome to Sexy Voices of Hollywood with your hosts, Robert Taylor and
Yayoi Winfrey.
Every other week on this show, we'll present another sexy voice of Hollywood.
This week's guest is author, blogger, filmmaker, and Michael Jacksonologist, Pearl Jr. Besides having a sexy Hollywood voice, Pearl Jr. and her Elbow Grease Productions also have a lot of products on the market, including books, DVDs, blogs, and websites.
Elbow Grease Productions produced the documentary Michael Jackson, The Trial and Triumph of the King of Pop, which was distributed worldwide in about 50 million homes for on-demand and digital outlets.
Check out MichaelJacksonInsider.com, TrueTalk.us, Barack Obama History, DVD.net, BlackWomenNeedLove2.com, BlackMediaReview.com, MichaelJacksonPseudoSci.com, and eMovieBook.com.
Welcome to the show, Pearl Jr.
Hi, well, I am so glad to be here. Being a longtime friend of Yayoi's, I'm just excited. And congratulations on your new radio show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pearl Jr. Can you tell us how you came up with that Jr. at the end of your name?
I didn't come up with it. It's my legal name. My mother, I was born in the 1960s. I don't mean to age myself. And it was the era of women's rights. And so after my parents had three girls in a row, they decided their fourth child, which you don't know if it's going to be a girl or a boy back then, was going to be named after my mom or my dad. And they both decided that whichever gender I was going to be, I was going to be a junior. So I happened to be a girl, so I'm named exactly after my mom with a junior at the end. So when I branched out and I said, okay, I need a creative marketing name and all this stuff, so I just got rid of some other stuff and I just go by the name of Pearl Jr. and it stuck.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Incredible. Very nice. Your latest book, Michael Jackson's Pseudocide, questions whether Michael actually staged his own death to be able to live in peace. What exactly inspired you to believe that?
The actual title of the book is Pseudocide, Did Michael Jackson Fake His Death to Save His Life? And I'm telling you, I was no easy win on this Michael Jackson faked his death. I mean, I fought it for 8 months. I was like, no, but, and all these clues and all these coincidences and all these slip-ups and mishaps and the timing. And eventually, the evidence became so overwhelming that he faked his death that I decided that I was going to write a book about it because I had been keeping notes on everything. And it's not just me, it's the entire worldwide fan base. And I would say probably, it used to be about 50-50 that wanted, you know, believe Michael was dead and want justice for Michael and Michael faked his death. But as time has progressed, it's about 70% of Michael fans believe now that he faked his death, and maybe about 30% just are dogmatic and refuse to hear any evidence to the contrary that Michael was killed or murdered or accidentally died. But the things that are just so bizarre, just to give you like a few just really strong clues, even though there are thousands of them, is number one, Michael was registered at UCLA under the name of Soleil Shawn. His blood work was done under the name of Trauma Gershwin. Michael's name still doesn't appear on the Forest Lawn Burial Locator website. Michael's name still is not on his grave site. So it's so much out there that it's kind of like, and then the 911 call, they never used the name Michael Jackson. The ambulance photo has been proven to be a fake and photoshopped. And in none of the casket was never, ever open. So it's like, okay, you know, come on, give us something. And on all the death documents, it uses Michael's middle name of Joseph. And Michael's real name is Michael Joe Jackson. And it's like, why are they, you know, the fans are, you know, all confused about this Joe Joseph thing. And it's like, why don't they just fix it? There has been four additional death certificates that have been released, and there's been plenty of time to change it to Michael Joe Jackson. And another weird thing is that when you talk about the death hoax of big celebrities, most people are like, oh, yeah, just like Elvis. And the weird thing about it, yeah, it is just like Elvis. I read, we happen to have in our library a book called Is Elvis Alive? And I read that book in one day, and it was like Michael used this book as the Holy Grail because it seemed that everything that was in this book about Elvis and the controversy of whether he was alive, Michael mimicked it. Like the middle name, the controversy with Elvis was Elvis Aaron Presley with one A or two A's. And so Michael right now with the Joe Joseph, and you can go on. I can go on and on and on.
That's amazing.
Pearl, can you tell us what would be the purpose of Michael Jackson faking his own death?
Sure. Well, Michael's reputation was just thrashed through the mud. And as a credentialed media participant, and there's only about 200 to 300 people in the whole wide world that sat in on the trial, the 2005 child molestation trial, and I happened to be one of the credentialed media. And I just couldn't believe the lies that came out of major media when I sat in the courtroom and heard the actual truth, and I would come home, 2.5 hour drive home, and listen to the news on the radio and how they picked one thing and they distorted it, and oftentimes downright lied on Michael and lied on some of the things that happened in the courtroom. So Michael's reputation was thrashed. He loves children. He loves children because he believes that if children are loved and appreciated more, they grow up to be nicer adults, and that's one of his things, and that's why he was always so into children, because children are our futures, and for it to be twisted around, like Michael wanted to have sex with children, and he wanted to have gay sex when Michael is a straight man, was just ludicrous. And as someone who sat there and listened to testimony, I can tell you there was zero evidence that told me that Michael had sex with this child.
So then you feel that the staging of the pseudo-side, as you phrase it, would benefit him, and that he could lose this reputation or this wrong reputation?
Yeah, because it's kind of like now, it's cool to be a Michael Jackson fan again. You see people, you know, honoring him. He sold 31 million records in a matter of 6 months. The world stopped and paid attention. And people who were silent or people who were fearful now came up and they were telling the truth, that it wasn't just my little tiny media source who was out there, you know, telling the truth and created the documentary, The Trial and Triumph of the King of Pop, and did all that I could to make sure that people understood that Michael was lied on and that he didn't have any interest in having sex with little boys or little girls, anyone. It just was nowhere. He said he would slit his wrist before he harmed a child. And so it was pretty much a copycat accusation from the 93, which was nothing but an extortion case. And I can talk about that all day long, but anybody who wants to know the actual facts of the case, please, you know, you can go on Amazon. It's still available on digital download. Take a few moments to, you know, to watch Michael Jackson, The Trial and Triumph of the King of Pop, and your mouth will just drop open with, oh my goodness, I didn't know that. One of the things that I learned was the $20 million that was reportedly paid to the first kid in 93 was paid by Michael's insurance. Because when a star is on tour, if something happens to that star, the show is over. So they are insured for everything. And that is something that the public never knew, that the reason why Michael was talked into settling out of court, and he admitted no wrong, was because it was already covered.
One of the things that I find interesting is you mentioned that approximately 70% of fans or persons in general, people believe that he did, in fact, you say fake his death?
Well, it's within the Michael Jackson fan community. It hasn't really made it out of the mainstream here in America. It's made it out of the mainstream in France, and it's beginning to be a mainstream thought in Italy. But right now in America, the big media isn't really covering, so there's a huge underground Michael Jackson fan base. And from my observation, this is what I'm believing, because the evidence is so overwhelming, and it becomes even quite ridiculous. Some of the clues and the evidence, I mean, for example, this is it. Michael happens to die, you know, just when he happens to finish enough footage for the movie, This Is It. And, you know, and they had all these cameras, and it was all just beautifully done. And then when you learn who AEG is, who was the company that Michael was signed up for to perform a concert series in London, you learn that they own more movie screens than anyone else in the world, right? So you're like, and then the opening of LA Live, which is this big multi high million-dollar complex in downtown L.A. across from the Staples Center. It's called L.A. Live, and they were opening a theater right across the street, the Regal Theater, with 14 screens. And just so happens that Michael dies just in time for us to tell the whole world, and all cameras on us for the premiere of This Is It. I mean, I believe in coincidences, but this is a business coincidence of monumental proportions. Plus, when you look back and you look at domain registrations, which give you an idea of when a business or an idea was coming to fruition, and you see when LALive.com was registered, it was registered in 1996, coincidentally on my sister's birthday, which is kind of crazy. But also, Michael Jackson Live was registered way back in the year 2000. And it hasn't been used for anything else except to sell those tickets for This Is It. So, I mean, I go on and on and on and on and on and on with just proof and evidence that Michael Jackson staged his death.
Another controversial book you wrote and published is Black Women Need
Yes.
Love To. Please explain what you meant by that title.
Well, I'm really an activist, and I know we're segueing from Michael Jackson, but it's really kind of important to kind of, you know, give background of who I am. I'm an activist for the upward mobility of the black race. I'm an equality activist. There's so many inequalities based on race that still exist in this country. And so as someone who says, you know, if we want race to really, really not matter, we really have to balance economy, we have to balance poverty, we have to balance the richness of the world, we have to balance education, we have to balance two-family households. So how do you do that? And after writing several books and being an activist, I wanted to find out really what is one of the biggest problems in the black community that's halting us from really having a country or a world that's rid of color lines. And it really comes down to a lack of two-parent household. It becomes the family is the basic foundation of any civilizations, even in the animal world. They decide, okay, the male and female is going to take care of the child until the child's able to take care of themselves. So I said to myself, there's so many single black women out there. There's so many single black mothers out there. There's so many children that don't have their father in their world that I wanted to write a book saying, look, guys, you know, black women need love too. Hello. You know, because it seems like no one's paying any attention to the hardships of the average black woman. I'm not saying every black woman doesn't get married, but our marriage statistics are lower than all other races. Our two-parent households are lower than all other races. And when a woman is doing everything herself, it makes it very, very difficult for her to have the energy, the time, and the patience to really do everything really, really good. So most black women are overwhelmed with duties being a mom and a dad. And also in hip-hop, the bitch hoe syndrome didn't help either.
Right.
Pearl Jr., as an associate producer of the film Watermelon Sushi, you've brought luminaries like Kumo D to the table. Any upcoming surprises?
Yes. You know, I'm really excited about your story as well, Watermelon Sushi, you know, because of your, you know, multicultural background and what that means, you know. So that's why I signed on, because I thought that, you know, there's another story to tell. In this pursuit of racial equality, to where none of the races really are superior or inferior to another. And that's really and truly my goal. But there are other surprises.
Okay, Pearl Jr., as credentialed media, you cover the Michael Jackson trial every day. What was the difference in the way you felt at the beginning of it and at the end?
Well, I have to say that I wasn't there every day. It's like Catherine, who I want to give just the utmost love, admiration, and respect for. She was there every single solitary day. I missed some days, but I was there as much as I could be. And I sat directly behind Joe and Catherine. I mean, directly behind them, because I wanted to let them know that I got your back. And the reason why I sat behind them was the first day that I went to court, and I was in the overflow room. It was the second day of trial, but it was my first day there. And I was in the back with a lot of press, because the courtroom was so crowded. And I heard the accuser's sister, her name was Davila, she was on the stand. and she said, now I had no idea whether Michael was guilty or innocent when I walked up there, when I drove up there, especially Cecil and I did not even discuss whether we thought Michael was guilty or innocent. It wasn't even a part of our mindset. We went up there thinking we were just going to do one 30-minute true talk show, because I had a talk show that aired in Los Angeles, and we were going to do it from the sidewalk. And so, you know, we just thought, you know, one little thing and, you know, please, please. And, you know, but we ended up qualifying because our show was available to a million people in Los Angeles. So we ended up qualifying as fully credentialed media. But I was in this overflow room the first day I was there, second day of trial, and Davelin said, I did not know my father molested me until my mother told me. And I was like, did anybody hear that? And no one paid any attention to it. And she repeated it. And I said to myself, oh my goodness, she is saying her mother put them up to all this. Because she couldn't really say it straight up, so she was using trickery. And I was like, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, she is telling everything right here. And no major media picked up on that. And I did. And I said, oh my goodness, they're setting Michael up. This is all a lie. The mother put them up to all of it. That's when I took it more seriously. That's when I started paying attention. That's when I said, okay, I'm a part of this. They aren't taking my brother down like that, period. Because I heard more and more testimony about Michael being innocent, about how the family were grifters, how they set him up, how just everything was just kind of a plan that they used to try to get rich and for them to solve their poverty issues. And that's what changed me. And then as the trial progressed, more and more evidence substantiated. And I knew when I heard the jury instructions, I listened to the whole thing because the judge read the entire, I don't know how many pages, but it took hours. He read it. And so I said they weren't getting Michael on anything. And one cute little story is that I was, during deliberations, I was at Neverland outside the gates with the fans, and one of Michael's security came out in the infamous black SUVs, and he was going really, really, really slowly. And I was like, oh my goodness, I think he wants me to come over there. And they would talk to me, you know, every now and then, no long conversations, but I would talk to Catherine and Joe every now and then in court, not long, because it was very, very strict on what you could do up there, and you did not want to get kicked out. But anyway, so I walked up to the car, and one of Michael's security guards, his name was Kerry, he said to me, he said, well, what do you think? And I said, you tell Michael, don't you worry, they're not getting him on nothing. And I know that I found out later that Michael was hiding in the back seat on the floor, on the floor listening, because he was so concerned and so worried that he was going to go to jail. He knew he was innocent, but you can imagine. And then he was so thin. Oh, my God, they talk about Michael being thin and this is it. No way. I saw him in the flesh, really, really thin at the end of that trial, like you could blow, and you blow him over. And he was so concerned, and I just knew that they weren't getting him on anything, and we celebrated that I was right. And it was based on facts. The jury did only what the jury could do, which was say there's nothing here that substantiates that Michael molested this child, period. I have been stuck, not stuck, but for whatever reason, I am still in this Michael Jackson world. It was a coincidence that I ended up at the trial, a coincidence that I ended up being, you know, the only black-owned media credentialed to cover the biggest trial in the world. But I'm still here. I'm still in the world of Michael Jackson. I did step out for a while and produced a DVD on Barack Obama called The Power of Change. It was very, very underground, grassroots, active in that campaign, so that we can break that glass ceiling to get the first black family and black man elected to the White House. Now, the new project that we have that we are finishing right now is called Is Michael Alive? Did Michael Jackson fake his death? And that is coming up soon. We're in the final stages of editing, and it is a dropper. I dropped some things on you here, but there's like, you know, 10 times more things, more powerful than that, that prove that Michael Jackson faked his death. I'm still involved with the Jackson family events, which blows most fans away, that you wrote this book about Michael taking his death, but here I am seeing you with Jermaine and with Joe and with all these men. What's going on? We will see. Michael left a picture that was signed in May, and coincidentally, it was taken on my birthday, too. And it said, it was a picture of Michael and director of This Is It, Kenny Ortega, looking through a camera, and I thought it was an odd promo piece for the concert series. I thought it was an odd picture. And it was released the next day, and Michael wrote on the top of it, he says, "I love you, Michael Jackson, see you July 2011. And I was like, why did he say in July 2011? He was performing in 2009. Why did he write that? This was before he supposedly died, passed away, left, disappeared. And I didn't understand why he wrote 2011 there. So believe me, the book Suicide is, oh, you will be up all night. And also, we patented the Suicide book because what I did was, it's not just me, it's the fans' research as well. So what I did was, when I wrote the book, I incorporated a book, I called it an e-movie book, because while you're reading the book, you can click on links and you can watch videos. So anything that I say in the book, I'm going to show you the proof. I'm going to show you the verification. I'm going to show you the collaboration. And so while you're reading it, you can, as long as your internet is on, and we offer it in CD-ROM, and we also offer it as a digital download, you can read that book and you can watch videos at the same time. So it just incorporates reading with watching. So it's just a new experience.
Certainly an eye-opener. Definitely.
Yeah.
Information to check out and to research. Thank you, Pearl Jr., for being on the show. And by the way, you do have a sexy voice.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate being on your show. It's such an honor, and I wish you guys a mega, mega success. And if anybody wants to know anything about me and Michael Jackson, please log on to our website, MichaelJacksonInsider.com.
MichaelJacksonInsider.com.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Yayoi.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, Pearl Jr.
Thank you, Pearl Jr. That's it, folks. And please join us next time for another Sexy Voices of Hollywood.